And chapter 42, continuing, hopefully we'll finish chapter 42 this week. We are on page 226.
Yeah, we've been 42 a while.
Yes, it's a long chapter. It's long been chapter. Very interesting.
That's all right, it's good stuff.
So 226, we're on the third line from the top. Last word is Vihini Pnimius Achaius Eina Nira Eina Basar. Okay, and in the English it's the first paragraph on the right hand.
The essential thing.
Yeah, it's the first paragraph on the left-hand side. So
left-hand side?
Yeah. So we're at the top of the page. Yeah, so it's going to be...
Over here.
The other left-hand, yes.
The other. What do I know?
Yes. So, anyway, so the...
In addition to this.
Uh-huh. So we've been talking about das, which means connection, a feeling of being connected to Hashem. And he said that the way to do that is through meditating. And he made a point of saying that what we're talking about a person becoming connected to Hashem and realizing the relationship with Hashem, is that it's all everybody on their own level. And he's been saying that for many chapters. In various chapters, he said it in chapter 3, alluded to it, and in chapter 13, where he talks about that it's true on their own level, each one on their own level, and a person shouldn't say, well, I can't be as good as that person because it doesn't matter. We don't care. This person has to be as good as they are, and then that will suffice it. So he says, now... Yeah, so the last thing that he gave for an example is that it says, now we're ultimately tying it back in, and he actually answered the question at the beginning of the chapter about fear. It says, the Talmud says, the Gemara says, all that God asks is that you fear, and says it's a no big deal for Moshe. And how does that relate to us? And he says, well, there's this little Moshe inside each of one of us, and we just have to tap into it. And the easy way to tapping into that little Moses that we have inside of us is to develop the Yira Tata, he calls it, the lower level of fear, which the lower level of fear is based on empirical evidence, looking around and seeing that the Almighty fills all worlds and encompasses all worlds, and compared to the world, to Hashem, the world is like nothing. So he says now about this idea. He says, "Pnimius v'chayus einai nira le'enei baser, rak be'enei seichel." So the life force is that it's in everything. You're not going to see it. There was some psychiatrist who thought himself very clever, who actually was quite stupid. I don't remember his name. That in 1906 wrote a paper. And said that the conclusion was he had vivisected dozens of bodies, dissected uh-huh. dozens of bodies.
What's vivisecting?
What, a live person.
Yes.
Dissected many people and had never found a place where there's a soul. There's no place for a soul to go. So therefore he concluded that there must be no such thing as a soul. Uh-huh. So, hence,
I'm glad he did
really,
that.
Really smart person, yes. Yeah. So,
he's right himself?
Right. He kind of had like a dead brain himself, yes. So, but the thing is you're not going to see it. All you see is the traces of it. You know, we're looking, you know, we're talking, the big thing in science is something called the God particle. I'm sure you heard about that. He says they're never going to find that either, but they'll find the traces of it.
Yes.
You know, the thing that connects everything, that glues everything together. Because they've never seen an atom either, but they kind of know that those things exist, an electron. They never saw it, but they can kind of see that it leaves something behind. So we know when people are alive.
Yeah.
You're not going to tell me what it is. You can say that it is. So, but we understand that life is a something. And it's medical science. I mean, science has a way of measuring these things. We know that there's a certain electrical and magnetic impulse that the body produces. You have EEGs and EKGs and MRIs and all these different things that are measurable with machines that say, well, this person is alive. So you'll know that it is, but you can't see what it is, and it's obvious that it's there. That's what he's called. You can see it with your intellectual eye, but not with a physical eye. That the fact that life is enclosed in the physical body and all of its limbs, so just as it is, this is a really easy comparison. I can see I'm alive, and I know that my neshama is enclosed in my body. So take it one step further. I know that Hashem is enclosed in the world. We have lots of points of comparison. It talks about all the time that the world is considered like a big body, and a person is considered like a small world. You've heard such comparisons before, you have. So if I can say that I'm alive because of a life which is enclosed within me, everybody feels their life is inside of them. I haven't come across anybody who says, you know, I don't feel like there's like a life. I feel like there's like my life is like around me. Okay, it's not, I don't, like, you know, I breathe in, it kind of like stays all out there, you know, so it doesn't, no, even though there is life around you too, but that's a side point. So the life of the person is enclosed in their body, and they recognize, I can see that there is a life inside of me. And I'm going to call the world a big body, so it's easy to understand. There's stuff is moving all over the place, and there's growth, and there's energy, it's measurable. So it must be an energy that's comparable to my neshama. What am I going to call it? I'll call it Hashem. I haven't got anything else better to call it. And I'll say this is how Hashem relates to the world. And then understanding just a simple verse. Se'u maram einechu moru mi bara ela. Lift up your eyes and see who created these things. These, you have the vast universe, and just being able to see that there's just so much, 4 trillion stars in the sky, and understand that it's all there's a tremendous amount of energy in each one, and we're told that each one of those stars dwarfs our sun. That's what we're told. And it's all this vast expanse, 13 billion light years across. It's all enlivened by Hashem.
Yeah.
There's an energy that's enlivening it. It's all Hashem. It's a monumental thing. It's tremendous. To understand, not just to say, it actually cheapens God. It's actually an embarrassment to say that God's a little bit bigger than the universe. Okay, God is 13 and 1 billion light years. Yeah. That really trivializes God.
Yes, it does.
That's like the story with Hillel Parachu, who said that before he learned Tanya, so he knew he had to. It says in Shulchan Aruch that you have to think and meditate about on concepts that will make you afraid of Hashem.
Yep.
So he would say you're supposed to fear Hashem before you daven. So he would think, how scared would I be if a dog was chasing me, and really imagine what it was like if a dog was chasing him. And then you would say, how scared would I be if a bear was chasing me? And become very afraid. And he said, now let me be afraid of Hashem. And he said, when he started learning Tanya, he realized that his definition of God was just a little bit bigger than a bear. So what he's saying over here is he's not saying that you should take a look at the universe, take a look at everything that's in the universe, and he's not saying that you should imagine that God is just a little bit bigger than the universe, because that's all I can see, because that trivializes God tremendously. But rather, just to understand and appreciate that there is a bit of godliness which is enclosed in the entire universe.
Just a bit.
And to understand how awesome that is then, and what that our relationship with Hashem then. As he said now, that a person has to therefore see, it's like they're looking at the physical world, and all of the everything's in it, that the infinite of Hashem is enclosed in them to enliven them. And he says, if you look at the note, V'gam nira b'riyas ha'ayin. If you look physically, shehem b'telem lo'ora yisborach, The constellations are nullified to God. How so? B'shtachavisim kol yom klapi meir b'shkiyosim. That we see that the sun is traveling in an arc towards the west. Mm-hmm. As it says, the Arizal writes on the pasuk that the heavenly hosts bow down to you. Mm-hmm. That the Shekhinah is in the Marv. Shekhinah is in the west. The divine presence is in the west. Why is it that the sun goes from east to west? Is because it's going towards the divine presence in a state of bowing down, quote unquote, so to speak. Mm-hmm. I heard one rabbi actually postulate that were that not the case, the sun should be actually going west to east. But I've never seen anything scientific that would suggest that there's a wrong orbit someplace.
I heard a comment one time that because it says in Bereshis, and the sun rose in the east, I read the commentary somewhere, but why does it bother saying it if it's not obvious that
right?
It's because it
normally should have been the other way.
It was the other way around.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah.
Uranus is the only one that orbits west.
Right, the other way around.
Right.
Yes.
Yeah.
But doesn't that's the say
troublemaker.
Anything.
It's the troublemaker. Yes.
Yeah.
Doesn't say anything. We don't know why.
Yes, so he's saying that the sun and all things go to the west is because that's where the divine presence is, and it's sort of like in a state of constantly bowing down to the divine presence, in a state of nullity to the divine presence.
Take a listen.
Klapi Meir, v'hu derech ishtachava ubitl. This is what's called bowing down for the sun. No, the sun doesn't have knees, you know, so. Hine gami shaloi ra'a samalach ma'olam. Even a person who's never, ever seen a king. Ve'ena makiro klal, and doesn't recognize the picture of him even. Afal pikein, but nonetheless, kishenichnas lechaser hamelech, when the person is led into the king's chamber, v'ra'a sarim v'rabim v'nechvadim mishtachavim le'ish echad, and he sees all these ministers and this great multitude of people bowing down. Yeah. To this one person, people all love Emo Pacha, so he's also automatically going to have sense of fear and dread.
Yeah.
There is a story in the Gemara involving Reb Sheshith.
Mm-hmm.
Reb Sheshith, I'm not sure if it was on the onset, but in his later years, he was blind. And he lived in Yerushalayim, and the Caesar was coming to visit Jerusalem.
Uh-huh.
And so they had a whole parade. The king is coming to visit. Mm-hmm. So he's blind. He's led by somebody over there. And there's a whole big tadadam. There's like all these like drummers.
Mm-hmm.
And the guy says, oh, the king is coming. So Reb Sheshith said, no, the king is not coming. So then came the trumpeters. And he said, oh, now the king must be coming. He said, no, the king is not coming.
Okay.
So then came the horsemen. He said, oh, now the king is coming. He said, no, now the king is not yet coming. Then suddenly there was quiet. And he said, now, the Reb Sheshith said, now the king is coming. So the people saw the king fell. We don't relate to this. We don't know from kings.
Yeah.
You know, our leader gets changed every 4 to 8 years. You know, and even so, what happens if you meet it? And what happens when you meet the guy? You shake his hand and go to get your picture taken. You know, so that's you know, like with a pony.
Yes, indeed.
So,
yes. Very fitting.
Yeah. Anyway, that was not a political statement because that's the way it's been for.
Yes, it is.
Since there've been presidents, basically, since the advent of the Polaroid. You know,
I think of a good king. I can't think of a good king in Atlantic today.
There's no kings now. There's no real kings now.
No.
You know, you have the kings queen, the queen of Sweden, and the queen of Holland. These, you know,
dictators.
They're not kings. They're dictators.
But they have your fear. If you were under their subjugation,
even the British monarchy is figurehead, really.
They have no power.
They have life and death.
The Rebbe Rashab said the last real king was Nicholas III.
Oh, really?
Yeah. Mm-hmm. There hasn't been a real king since then. Okay? So.
It's interesting.
Because a king, Nicholas III, 1917, he got bumped off. The Bolshevik Revolution took care of him.
Yeah.
and everybody in his family except for maybe Alexei, who disappeared. That's another story. Anyway.
Thanks.
Va'afshu al yidei hislavshus b'levushim rabim. So he says, even though, he mentioned this point at the end of chapter 4, that the godliness is very obscured. It's obscured by a tremendous cover called the physical world. And so you're looking and you're saying, oh, there must be godliness because things are moving. By definition, it says, V'achayim is not now es atzmai. How do you know something is alive? Is it moves by itself? That's the definition of alive. So, if I can see that I can see this thing, and I see that it's moving, so there's a life in it, but I see the thing, I don't see the life. And we'll take, for example, we have this thing called an inanimate object. The word inanimate means that it does not move. It's not alive, is what it says. But if you look really deeply into an inanimate object, you're going to see all kinds of things moving. Electrons moving around, nuclei and molecules and all these things. There's going to be a lot of movement going on over there.
They do get spiritual energy.
There's all kinds of physical energy.
Biological.
It's physical energy. Okay? So, but when you're looking at it, let's say it's a rock. So the godliness is enclosed in the rock, and you want me to get all excited about it? There is a story that, I don't know what year it was, but the Rebbe, the Friedrich Rebbe, before it was Rebbe, asked the Rebbe of Shab, what was he meditating about on Rosh Hashanah that year? And he said, the chayas that's enclosed in his shtender. He was meditating about the godliness as it's manifest into this inanimate object. That was his focal point on Rosh Hashanah. So he says, what are we here? But wait a minute, it's a shtender, it's a piece of wood. It's not godliness. So he says, he said this one before. Ein hevdol hefresh klal b'yiras ha-melech boser v'dam b'ein shehu arav v'ein shehu levush levush ha-achod v'ein shehu levush lushim rabim. He says, well, you're talking about the king. If you're talking about the king, it doesn't make any difference. If you see the king, he's got nothing on. He's got on one piece of clothing. He's got on the full regalia. If he's a king, there's going to be a fear instilled in just being in his presence, which is indicated, for those who are familiar with history, that during the 1917, when the Bolsheviks took over, they couldn't find anybody who could pull the trigger to kill Nicholas. Everybody went in and just got scared and walked out. And finally they had to get a mashugana to assassinate him. Because this is a person that even though he was himself chained and he was not wearing anything regal, but he had that presence of regalness. So with Hashem in the world, Hashem, so he's going to talk about this later in chapter 7 of Shaar Yechid Ve'Amunah. The name of God, the function of God that relates directly to the creation is Adonai. We'll talk about how it works now. He's going to say that for chapter 7 in Shaar Yechid Ve'Amunah. Stay tuned. What does Adonai mean? Adonai means boss. Hashem relates to us as a Lord, Master, King, Boss. Adonai, Malchus. It's the same thing. El Ha'ikr, so what's the main thing? So that's all very old and good. What does that do? Is that puts God out there someplace, which is doesn't do me any good. El Ha'ikr hu ahargal lahargal daitu makshavti tamid. He says, what should a person do? Practice. A person needs to practice focusing his attention constantly. To have it set in his heart and in his brain always. That everything that's going on in the world is a garment that's containing godliness. And that a person should look at the world as an expression of Hashem. And he talks about this again in a greater length of chapter 7. The bottom line over there is that it's a Hayom Yom is based on it, that there's a very thin line between belief and denial is a line. Because to say everything is God, no, to say God is, this is God, God is this. Yeah, to say everything is God is idolatry. To say God is everything is fine. To say that God is this table is actually 100% true. Because what is this table? This table is made out of God.
Yes.
But to say that this table is God makes it now the table an idol.
Or even the whole universe.
It's according to which one you put first.
Correct. It depends where your main focus is.
Yes.
And the main focus in this instance has to be Hashem.
Exactly. Yeah.
So given that, I understand that I have to focus and understand how everything is really a manifestation of Hashem. And then what will happen is I'll be constantly thinking about their inner character of every item and their life, how everything really is Hashem. There's a story involving, again, the Rebbe Rishab and the Friedrich Rebbe, but this time the Friedrich Rebbe was a young boy. I'm not sure if it was 10 or 12. And the Friedrich Rebbe wrote quite extensively of his memoirs. We have in existence two very thick volumes, mm-hmm. and there is more that actually was never published.
Really?
And I don't know why they don't, but there is more that wasn't published because the Friedrich Rebbe kept a diary from the time that he was about, I'm not sure if it was 9 or 12, until he was 70.
Wow.
And he wrote regularly.
Wow.
Okay, so there's don't know. There's a lot more there than just these storybooks that we have called the Friedrich Rebbe's memoirs. So he writes...
It's all documented. It's not just a bunch of stories. Like it's real...
It's things that were happening, yeah. Things that were going on.
Oh,
things that, you know, things that impressed him. I have no idea.
You
have
that's
to
crazy.
You have to ask Beryl Levin. Anyway, so the... So he writes there a story. I think they were in Wiesbaden. They were in some kind of a resort town in the summertime. And they're going for a walk. And the Rebbe is telling his son about how godliness comes into the world as they're talking over there. And the Friedrich Rebbe, as he's walking, says, a little kid, he pulled a leaf off a tree. And the Rebbe Rishab didn't say anything. And after he kept very quiet. He became very quiet. And then later on, he I don't remember the exact line, he said something to the effect of, the creation process that had to be put in place in order to be able to condense the godliness into that leaf, and you just wantonly ripped it off and detached it from its life force. Okay, it's a bit schwer if you ask me. It's like, you know, it's just pulled a leaf off, you know. So, but the what the Rebbe Rishab, what the Rebbe Alter Rebbe is saying over here is that a person should be cognizant that we live in a world which is totally and completely pervaded through with godliness through and through, permeated with godliness, comprised of godliness, made up of godliness. Hmm. Think about it, but not when you're driving. You come with the conclusion that the car in front of you is just the same godliness that you are, just try to drive through it, right? No, don't do that. Wait till chapter 7 of Shar Yochid Vamona before you start getting into that stuff.
Uh-huh.
Stay tuned. Yeah. Opinion is what Hayosan Vizel Nichol Gam came Belosh and Amuna. This is also, he was saying that this is also part of our faith. This is how he started in the beginning of the chapter 42 of discussing that Moshe was the Raya Mehem, that he instilled belief. What is our belief? Shehulash and Regilus. The word of belief is also related to the word frequent. Shemar Galadamas Asma Kemai Uman Hamai Min Yadiv. Like the word smith or craftsman. Okay, what makes a person a craftsman? Is they know how to do it really good.
Yeah.
Now, how is it that they know how to do it really well? Because they've done it lots and lots of times.
They've made all the mistakes.
To the point where they don't even need to think about it anymore.
They figured that one out.
So the relationship of the word amuna to uman, to a faith, to a craftsperson, is that our faith should be such that it's just like on auto. We become like masters of understanding.
Yeah.
Like, obviously, that the world is so permeated with Hashem.
Yes.
It also fits in the world into a muna because I can't prove it. V'gamli yisli zikun tamid lashon rizal. And also to remember constantly that which our sages say, Kabbalah al malchus shemayim, that you have to receive upon yourself the yoke of heaven. As stated in the verse, that you shall surely place a king upon yourself. So when it talks about that, that's in Parshas Ki Tetzeh. Show of Tim, I always get the two mixed up. Sorry. That talks about when you come to Eretz Yisrael and you want to emanate the Ki Tetzeh. You want to emulate the nations of the world, that they have kings, and you could have a king. So you'll put yourself a king upon you. But wait a minute, since I'm the one pointing the king. Uh-huh. So therefore, I should have some sort of dominion over the king. So he says, no, there's certain rules. If you're going to call this person king, that you have to follow. You can't sit in his chair ever. You can't ride on his wagon ever. You can't marry his widow if he dies. All this is a sense of respect and awe for the king.
Mm-hmm.
Okay, you're not supposed to contradict the king. All kinds of things involved with the king that apply to fear of the king.
Mm-hmm.
So he says now, but if we didn't have a king, we still have this concept of accepting upon ourselves a king.
Mm-hmm.
And that's called Kabbalas el Malchus Shemayim, accepting upon yourself the yoke of heaven.
Mm-hmm.
As it says in Perkei Avos, that a person has a choice. They can either accept upon themselves the yoke of heaven and throw off, it says, the yoke of Rishus, the work of the yoke of the world.
Right.
Or they can accept upon themselves the yoke of the world and throw off the
have a good time.
The yoke of heaven.
Yeah.
So the person has to he says to it's good to believe and frequently understand and be in line and in tune and in a groove that the person lives and is surrounded by godliness.
Mm.
But a person can become very flippant. Because the person could say, yes, I love Hashem and Hashem loves me and we have this open relationship and he doesn't mind me doing whatever I do. That could be the result of such a thought. So the person has to accept upon himself, no, there are rules. The king says I have to do such and such. That's why it says that we do the Shema first, the first paragraph, Shema Yisrael, and then we do the V'hayim Shemoa. The first Mishnah and Brachas, mm-hmm. That in order to, before you can do mitzvahs, you have to accept upon yourself the commander who's commanding you to do the mitzvahs.
Yeah.
So we have the Shema Yisrael, which is a declaration, Shema Yisrael, Hashem Elokeinu, Hashem Echad, is a declaration that Hashem is not just one, but Hashem is a totality. And once we realize that Hashem is this totality, so now, that makes it that much easier to do mitzvahs. Okay? Anybody got any questions? I've been talking a long time.
That ties in with the first Aseres Hadibros, the first...
Mm-hmm. Absolutely.
The whole lens that everything we do is because he's a...
Correct.
Okay.
Yeah. Next lesson, Kika. Kodesh Baruch Hu Maniach Es Elyonu V'Tachtenu Miyachad Malchus Aleinu. Because, when you think about it, Hashem could have stopped at the world of Atzilus. Well, that's low enough for me, because it says that even the world of emanation for Hashem is like it's an embarrassment. Because it's a limited realm of conscious. So Hashem could have stopped there. So, oh, this is good enough. We got some infinite kindness, some infinite wisdom over here. There's just a little trace of what it might eventually turn out to be evil. We got some neshamas going on over here. This is, we'll stop right here. No. Hashem could have done that for all the different realms that we've been talking about, and they're all described in the Kabbalah. And Hashem said, that's not what I want. What I want is a physical 3D world with these creatures that don't even recognize me running around trying to find me. Okay? That's what it says.
It's a good idea.
So, but what does that do, though? It's actually, it's an amazing thing, though, what that does now. Is the top of the page, he's talking about thinking about how vast Hashem is. The bottom of the page, what the Alter Rebbe is talking about is, what's my relationship with Hashem now?
Right.
Hashem could have stopped with kindness of Atzilus. And did what? He created me. Your general rule, somebody does you a favor, you have an affinity, there's a developed rapport with that individual. If a person saves a person's life, there's a greater connection now. There's a greater affinity. How much more so than it is with Hashem, that Hashem, take it one step further, Hashem's the one who provided our lives for us. What should the reaction be? What should the result of that thought be? Wow.
Yeah, it's overwhelming.
I love Hashem.
Yeah, it's too overwhelming.
Hashem did all that for me. I love Hashem. And therefore, if you love him, you're going to show him.
Yeah.
Mm-hmm. Okay, you can't give him a big hug.
Practice what you preach.
Okay. Vanachas was chapter 35 through 39. Vanachnu mekablim kula. We accept upon ourselves Hashem is king. V'zeu inyan hishtachavay shebetula shmeina esrei achar kabbalas al malchus shemayim v'dibur b'kriya shma. That's why we bow in shmeina esrei. After we've said shma, and we've accepted upon ourselves the yoke of heaven. So now, okay, so I'm accepted upon myself the yoke of heaven. So what am I going to do? The first thing is show how subjugated I am towards Hashem. That I will bow down. Bowing down is an interesting thing. I think all of the world's religions have bowing down, if I'm not mistaken. I'm not sure about Protestants, if they ever get a chance to bow.
They do.
Okay.
Yeah, they do.
They do the kneeling thing, too? Okay.
No. By times.
By times.
Okay.
To the altar.
Yes,
okay.
Exactly.
Right, so everybody's got this kneeling thing going on over there. Okay, so kneeling is what is the first thing that happens when a person kneels, is they're shorter. Their heads have gotten down to a lower place. Just that act changes a person's perspective. Okay, I'm not my full height, my full stature.
Right.
Okay, I was walking home from Shul Shabbos, and there's a guy walking home with his kid, and I don't think his kid was 18 inches tall. I don't know if the kid maybe just started walking. The kid was maybe like 14, 15 months old. Little kid.
Yeah.
This kid I said good Shabbos to the father. This kid gave me a look. I thought he was going to fall backwards.
I'm sure.
So all the way up there, I was looking like a skyscraper or something to this kid over here. So the first thing that happens is that a person, when they're bowing, they lose that thing. They lose it. I know the 53 years that I'm around, I know how to use my height a little bit, and I know if I want to be in and put myself and exert my position and sort of like try and get my point across, I'll stand. And I'll look down on a person. I never look down on another person, but I'll look down, I'll pose it such that my voice is coming from up.
Yes.
And the person has to crane their neck up to look at me, to just talk with me, and I'll say this and this is what I believe is my opinion. Okay? So because having this full stature shows I'm a thing. But if you're kneeling, if you're bowing down, so you're coming down from that. Mm-hmm. It's an automatic thing. I'm now lowering myself.
Right.
And interesting, we just talked about the king. And we have four times we bow in Shemayin Esrei. A Jewish king, when he davened Shemayin Esrei, bowed once. He started at Baruch Atah and ended with Hama Baruch Hasama Yisrael Ba Shalom. Mm-hmm. Meaning he davened the whole entire Shemayin Esrei, bowed.
Really?
Because this is a person, listen, I'm the king.
Yeah.
I'm the head honcho. I'm the big gun. Okay?
Yeah. Wow.
Bigger than Hashem, you're not. And so to remind him that there's something else bigger, so the king had to bow the entire Shemayin Esrei.
Really?
To be in a total state of self-obligation.
Wow.
With us, it's just the four times.
Wow.
Wow. Okay? That thus ends, is it chapter 42? What time are we going to?
42.
Okay, so now we're going to continue with this idea. This basic theme continues. So we continue with this whole thing of love and fear. It goes on until chapter 47, 48, depends who you ask. So, with no further ado, well, you know, Yira Tzitzah, which is what we talk about later, this before, he mentioned this concept of a lower level of fear. Which the impetus of having a lower level of fear is I'm afraid enough to go do mitzvahs. Meaning, I have enough respect. I've accepted upon myself the yoke of heaven. And now, what am I going to do? I'm going to go do mitzvahs. Both refraining from doing bad and also doing good. So about all this, it says in Perkei Avos, Im ein yira ein chachma. If there is no fear, there can be no wisdom. And it says over there quite clearly that in order to be an impetus for a person to go learn, they have to first preface it by this respect that they have for Hashem. Uh-huh. And he's going to conclude the chapter by saying, of course, and there's the other part of that Mishnah that says, Imein Chachma Ein Yira. They're supposed to propel you to a higher level. So our bottom line is an interesting, I mentioned this before, The way that we say a religious Jew colloquially is a Yira Shemayim, a God-fearing person. It goes works in English as well. We don't say God-loving person.
Right.
How religious is that person? Oh, that person's a God-loving person. No, we say God-fearing person. Mm-hmm. Because God-fearing propels the person to be doing the right thing. They have this respect and reverence for Hashem,
yeah,
that whatever it is Hashem needs to have done, he's going to do. That should be the, and included in that happens to be one of the 248 positive commandments, just happens to be to know the entire Torah. That's how much Torah you just have to know. That's all.
Just the whole thing?
Just the entire Torah.
Good.
Nothing
good.
More.
That's it?
Yep.
Okay, I didn't realize.
V'yesh ba, everybody's got that obligation. V'yesh ba v'chinas katnus v'chinas godless. Okay, so in this whole concept, if there's no fear, there's no wisdom, so you have the smaller way of looking at it, you got the bigger way of looking at it. D'hainah k'shinim shachas v'chinas yirazu me'hizboinus g'delus Hashem. That means to say, what happens when a person's going to develop this fear from this meditation, the greatness of Hashem, the Yumamalikal Omim, that Hashem fills all of the worlds. Maha'aris l'rakiya mahalak tafkuf shana, that from the earth to the heaven is a walk of 500 years walk. I'm not exactly sure where you're walking. Because 500 years, when you're talking in space travel, isn't very far. In 500 years, I think I figured it out, it's probably about 50,000 miles, how much a person could walk in 500 years.
Yeah.
Which is not all that much when you're talking going up to heaven. I mean, the moon is 250,000 miles away.
Right.
I never knew what they meant by
yes, that. Yes, it's one of those perplexing things. It's obviously a level of godliness. You know, the 500 is 5 times 100, and 100 is a perfect number. 10 times 10 means the 10 spheres, that they're containing the 10 spheres, and the 5 is the 5 levels of severity. I mean, you know, so...
I heard it. I thought it was something... I don't know how to say
it. It's a Gemara.
Yeah.
Ubein Rekia L'Rekia, and between each heaven, there's also 500 years walk. Dragli Achai is Keneged Kulam. And so now you've got
the seven heavens is 3,500 years walk, and it says that the ankles of the highest Hakodesh weighs equal to all of them. And then it says the thigh, the shin weighs equal to all of that, and the knee weighs equal to all of that, and the thigh weighs equal to all of that, and the torso weighs equal to all of that, and the head weighs equal to all of that. And then that's only just the Chayas HaKadosh, and then you have to go to the Seraphim. And it says, L'mayla m'mayla gavoya gavoya shaymer. It keeps on going more and more and more and more. And what it basically is saying, the whole point of that statement from the Gemara is that every level of godliness compared to the level above it is nothing as far as godliness is concerned.
Right.
So when we're talking of a 500 years walk, what we're obviously talking about is some level of godliness,
yeah,
which compared to, which is such a level that we can relate to it in terms of time. Shana usually refers to, in talking spirituality, refers to level of change.
Uh-huh.
Because the word shana comes from the word shinoi, meaning to change.
Mm-hmm.
When you get a pattern of all the different seasons changing,
mm-hmm,
you go from winter to spring to summer to fall, and you're back now to winter again, oh, that's a shana, with the recognizable pattern. So there's these changes going on, 500 levels of change. Okay, and each one compared to the one before it, or each one compared to the one, whatever, how you do, before, up or down, whatever, is nothing.
Mm-hmm.
We came to Histalshulus Kolaylamos Lamaila Maila Droima Mailas, and so too it is with, that's just in the, that he's talking about over here with the angels and being comparable one to another, that's just in the spiritual world of action. It says then you got just in this, the in our spectrum of creation, you have three more worlds above that. And then above that you have an infinite number of worlds. Avopike Nikri Yirzu But nonetheless, even that's all true. Person's meditating on how the world of Atzilus functions and how God relates to the infinite characteristics which are described in Atzilus, and then comes up with a really awesome feeling about God. We're still calling that the lower level of fear, because it's based on our perception, and if it's based on our perception, that makes it low. You like that one, huh? Yeah. Because it's related, it's all based on empirical evidence.
Right.
And if you're looking at, we're looking around to develop this love or fear, so that's just the garments that you're looking at. That's not even taking into consideration Hashem. That Hashem conceals and hides himself and encloses himself to enliven them, to keep them in existence, that they should exist as a something from nothing. That feeling that the person now develops is the doorway to being able to go do mitzvahs. That's just the start. And this is where we're going to finish. So we're on page 227 to 228.
Right.
We're on the line that ends Torah and mitzvahs. Ach, we're going to take it from next week. To be continued.